The following is a CNA podcast.
We've had a little break, but welcome back to the Climate Conversations. I'm Jamie Ho. Natural gas prices have tripled since the start of this year, in large part fueled by demand from Asian economies emerging from lockdown. And here in Singapore, given our dependence on natural gas imports for electricity generation, the consequence is that electricity costs will surge. Already, the government has warned and advised households to conserve electricity. But as our society shifts towards greater electrification, think cars, 5G devices, data centers, energy demand and costs will only rise. How can we balance needs with our commitments to reduce carbon emissions? How long do we wait before alternative energy sources are reliable? And what does this all mean for the man on the street who may find his electricity bills going up? With me to discuss this is Lim Han Kwang, CEO of Genico and Group Head for Retail Regulation and Renewables at YTL Power Seraya, Genico's parent company. He's an 18-year veteran in the local energy industry. Welcome, Han Kwang.
Hey, hi. Thanks, Jamie.
I'm going to jump straight into the first question and, you know, talk about the industry given your experience. You've been doing it nearly 20 years now. Start by giving us a broad sort of overview of what our overall national energy and electricity ecosystem looks like now in terms of infrastructure, in terms of players, the talk about sustainability compared to, say, 10 years ago, right? And what has changed in even the last 2 years since the pandemic? And what kind of trends are you seeing in terms of consumption, price, things like that?
The Singapore energy sector has come a long way. It has actually moved from oil-based to actually natural gas over the last few years. Actually, from 2002 to now, I think it evolved significantly. And now, majority of the power is actually generated by a very efficient gas-fired combined cycle. 98% of the power is actually generated by this efficient machine. If you look at the mix that we have seen in Singapore, over the last few years, I think we definitely due to climate change, the government has wanted to actually bring in more green power into the space. So in the last few years, actually we are seeing more and more solar installation put into the system. As we are speaking now, right, there's actually about 4,500 grid-connected solar PV in the system. That accounts for about 340 megawatt AC. While you look at just the installed capacity, right, it's about 5% of our peak demand of 7,000. But the amount of actual electron that's being generated after netting off the customer internal consumption, as well as due to the intermittency of the solar panel, actually the contribution to the generation in total is actually less than 1%. So actually there's quite a limited amount of green power that's available in the market. The government is quite clear that they wanted to continue to lower the carbon emission. And we have actually set ourselves some targets that hopefully by 2030, they will want to make sure that solar installation actually hit 2,000 megawatt peak. Recently, we are also looking at importing power from the neighboring country. We have seen countries like Laos, even from Malaysia, we're trying to import power from them to actually increase more renewable power from air injecting into our grid.
Now, you know that the interesting thing about you, and you wear two hats, so to speak, you're a generator as well as a retailer, right? How does this model affect the way that you work? Does it make it more efficient in bringing such new alternative options for all customers onto the table? What kind of efficiencies are you seeing?
We actually like to call ourselves a gentailer, right? Meaning we are all retailers that's backed by a power generation company. It actually brings about a lot of efficiency because we are able to control the amount of electricity that we generate. We are able to control the cost, and therefore, with all the efficiency throughout the company, right, through the end-to-end process, actually we are able to provide very affordable as well as competitive price for our consumer.
Going back to April, right, 2018, that's when EMA, our Energy Market Authority, began moves to launch this new open electricity market. And by 2019, the year after, all of us can now choose from different retailers. Looking at it from the consumer perspective, aside from choosing a plan that fits our budget and needs of households, I learned that companies like yours now offers carbon offsets, this thing called the Power Eco Add-on. Explain how this contributes to your overall strategy and how's the take-up been? Do customers really know about this or are they really attracted to it?
Jamie, it's good that you're aware of our Power Eco add-on. So actually in Singapore, like you rightly pointed out, the market was opened in 2018 and there are actually about 12 OEM, we call them OEM retailers, are actually serving the residential. So it's very important for us to stay ahead of the curve by understanding what our customer actually require and cater our plan for it. We look at the trend and we know that consumers are getting more and more conscious about how they can actually help the environment. And that's why we came out with the Power Eco add-on product for our customer. We understand not every customer may be prepared to buy 100% green. They may want to choose the green contribution level that suits the affordability before they choose the plan. So with that, we came out with this Power Eco add-on. When the customer sign up any power plan with us, they get to choose whether they would like to have 35%, 50%, 75%, 100% of green contribution in their electricity plan. So it sounds like a bubble tea concept to you, right? So that's exactly how we came up with the ideas.
Okay, explain to me how it works. If I choose 100%, what does it mean?
So the Power Eco add-on actually falls under what we call a carbon neutral electricity plan, meaning that while the electricity that's being supplied to you continues to be drawn from the grid, and generated from the gas-fired machine in the system, what we do is that we will actually purchase either carbon credit or renewable energy certs from green projects, not in Singapore, but outside of Singapore, to actually help to offset your carbon emission for the electricity that you are using.
What's the incentive for me? I mean, obviously, let's say I'm entirely green conscious and I want to do as much as I can and I have the financial capacity to do it, say, right? What's going to sort of make me go for the 100% versus, let's say, the 50%? What's your value proposition to me?
Let's look at Singapore. Like, if you really want to have green electricity, what can you really do, right? So I think one of them, of course, if you have a rooftop at your house, right, you can actually install your own solar installation. I think that is actually one very quick way where you install your own solar panel and then you get supplied with green power. Alternatively, if you don't have a rooftop of your own, right, you can actually try to see whether anybody have a rooftop solar, inject into a grid and you buy the electricity from there. But then if all these options are not available, the best way now in the market for you to do your part for the environment is actually to choose the carbon neutral electricity, where you actually make payment for the carbon credit or renewable energy certs to support green projects to offset the kind of emission from the electricity consumption that you're using. So if you ask me whether you would like to do 100% or should you do 50%, honestly, I think that's why we launched the Power Eco option. You actually get to choose what you want. For example, I mean, I just give you some numbers. If you decided to go for carbon credit and you want 50%, maybe that will cost you about, currently based on the current price, about 80 cents per month.
80 cents in addition to, let's say, does it depend on how much electricity you use?
Yes, I think this 80 cents is worked out based on the Singapore average consumption of about 400 kilowatt hour. So you think about it, it's like 80 cents more for a month for 50% kind of using carbon credit. So if it's something that suits your actually budget, why not, right? The math is quite simple. You go 100%, it's just double. So you basically pay for a typical household, maybe you just pay another $1.60. So depending on your budget, I would say that it's really free for you to decide.
That's interesting. How do I get reassured that if I pay the $1.60, it goes to the right places? And do I have a choice in where it goes to, where the credits are paid into?
At this point, you don't get to choose where you get. We actually give you a choice of whether you want to buy carbon credit or you want to buy renewable energy certs. And at Genico, right, we actually make sure that we purchase all our carbon credit or even the renewable energy certs so that are actually certified by internationally recognized standards. For example, for our carbon credits, we actually purchase carbon credits only from projects that has met this standard called the Verified Carbon Standard that's administered by a company called VERA. They are an independent party. They are the expert in these areas. And all projects that has passed the Verified Carbon Standard will go through a robust, independent verification process. And any carbon credit that's issued by them is being tracked on the registry to ensure that the emission reduction are not double counted. And similarly, when we procure renewable energy certs, we are buying them from projects that fulfill the IREC standard. So I would say that by us buying from a reputable or credible source, I think that should give you the assurance that your money has actually gone to support green projects.
It's good to hear. So the key thing for me now, how has the take-up been? Do you see Singaporeans being vaguely interested in paying a little bit more towards being a little bit more green?
We launched actually around in August during the National Day period. I would say the initial response, I would say I'm quite satisfied with it. We actually see, right, about 10 times more new customers signing up for this Power Eco compared to a period where I just offer no option but just 100% green or no green plan. What is even more encouraging is that I also see some of my existing renewable customers who are not on green plan actually choosing the Power Eco add-on when they renew their price plan with us. I would say that it has been encouraging. I feel that it takes time as consumers in Singapore become more aware of the climate change and want to do their part. I believe this Power Eco add-on will continue to gain traction.
Do you think in the longer term, the action and where the real influence is going to be may not be in households then, but the bigger electricities of consumers? It could be corporates, it could be industry. Are you guys looking in that direction, or are you sort of balancing your approaches between households and larger consumers?
This carbon neutral electricity can actually be offered to both residential as well as the commercial industrial. So we have started by introducing it to the residential customer, and definitely offering such so-called carbon neutral electricity is something that we are also in the works to provide to our commercial and industrial customer as well.
I'm going to take sort of a little bit of a bigger picture and talk about something that's really happening now. We see what's happening in Europe, for example, right, where natural gas prices have been going up. Minister Gan Kim Yong now has said that, you know, electricity prices here are bound to rise as well, telling people to be careful about how they use electricity. As you see all these sort of developments happening, do you think these sort of external events, these price shocks, give us more impetus to look at even more alternatives beyond energy imports? And what do you do? Does this have any impact on your efforts, both rolling out alternatives as well as things like this Power Eco add-on and trying to push people to play a little bit more for the green option?
We all recognize that in Singapore, a country where we do not have a lot of natural resources, so even for power plant that's generated by natural gas, all the natural gas are imported. The price of all these raw materials are definitely affected by the global price movement or demand supply. So I think the minister is right that increase in price is unavoidable if the global price of raw materials are increasing as well. This does not actually derail us from the direction that we should continue to try to achieve, I know what, that net zero by 2050, to ensure that the temperature do not increase by 1.5. I think we need to stay on course. If you look at the Power Eco add-on, actually, it actually doesn't fluctuate with the so-called fuel cost. So actually, even though the underlying electricity could be higher, but actually the cost to purchase the carbon credit or carbon offset that I shared with you earlier is not changing yet, because these are not directly correlated. So I would think that the incremental cost to you to being green still remains the same. If I look at the current price that the retailers is offering to the residential, even after you add on the Power Eco, right, I think it's still cheaper than the regulated tariff. The interest to go green should continue to gain a lot of traction moving forward.
Yeah, I'm therefore going to ask you the next question as you put on your YTL Seraya hat and talk a little bit more about the alternatives, therefore, and renewables. You know, our government has announced, you know, as part of the Singapore Green Plan, working on 4 switches of supply. Natural gas, as we've been talking about, solar, regional power grids, and emerging low-carbon alternatives as part of the overall national transition. Obviously, it's not going to be easy. Huge part of it is going to be infrastructural. Sitting from where you are, what are the biggest sort of obstacles or challenges for a country like Singapore in terms of infrastructure going ahead and being able to tap on all these 4 sort of in parallel and sort of being able to switch from one priority to the other? Because as we have seen, yes, natural gas is perhaps one of the cleanest and most efficient energies. But if we're going to move away from that as well to other things, solar, regional power grids, what are the challenges that we need to look at as we head towards 2030 and beyond, you think?
So you're right that when we look at, we want to make a decision on how we want the energy story of Singapore to be like, we actually need to look at 3 aspects, the environmental sustainability, the affordability, and the reliability component. I think these are what we typically call the trilemma that any policymaker will have to actually consider when they want to look into how to get the right mix of power into Singapore. For the 4 switches, if you look at it, right, I think solar energy definitely will continue to be the most promising renewable energy source in Singapore. And with our target to reach 2 gigawatt peak, I think 2 gigawatt peak will be the maximum, most probably, that we could actually get out from the so-called land and available space in Singapore. So that itself will not be able to fulfill all the requirements. And moreover, you know, solar power fluctuates. depending on weather condition, such as the amount of sunlight. And so while we can actually meet the environment sustainability by introducing solar energy, but the intermittency created by the solar is something that we also need to look out for. So next, stepping on the regional power grid. Today, I think Singapore only have one connection with Malaysia, but actually that connection was never meant for commercial purposes. To get access to more sustainable energy sources that otherwise would not be available in Singapore, right? We definitely need to look outward and see how we can bring in more green power into Singapore. And of course, the biggest challenge I see is how do we bring it in? So I think that is where, in terms of cost, who will want to invest in submarine cables to bring power into Singapore would definitely be a key consideration if you want to make that happen. Similarly, importing power has its own drawback as well.
Yeah, of course.
For example, if a submarine cable is down due to outage, right, it could take many months to repair. And during this period, so what happened to Singapore, right? As part of the four switches, you can see that natural gas is still in one of the switch, because I think the natural gas will continue to play a very important role in our Singapore market. Why do I say that? Even with all the import as well as the solar, I don't think we will be able to get enough to supply 100% of Singapore. So gas-fired machine will continue to provide what I call the baseload of Singapore. Some of these gas-fired machine can also be converted to what we call fast start machine that could help to address the intermittency issue caused by the solar installation in Singapore. Some of the older combined cycle can also be repurposed to provide backup facility for the power import, so that this machine can actually be run when there is a major outage of the import. So the third portion is actually emerging technology. Things that the government is exploring are the use of green hydrogen to actually power up the generator, and as well as carbon capture. But based on what we see now, these new technologies still have a long way to go. Maybe after 2035 will be something where all this technology will mature and could be an area that we explore. So for now, the deployment of solar power import and continued usage of the gas fire machine would be the right strategy for now until 2035.
You mentioned Laos early on in our conversation, and obviously the potential that people see in hydro from places like Laos. Explain the complications and the sort of infrastructural challenges as well, if we are going to look into options such as that. Obviously, when you talk about underground submarine cables, yes, people talk about Australia and solar. But if it's something relatively close by to our neighborhood, Laos, with such a huge source of renewables, what goes into us tapping into that from the power generation perspective?
The good thing about Laos is that actually electrically, right, between Laos, Thailand, Malaysia to Singapore, we are physically connected. What is actually something that we need to really work on is we have to pass through all the different networks. If you want to move from Laos to Singapore, yeah, you have to go through Thailand, Malaysia. The coordination of how the electron can actually be pushed from Laos all the way to Singapore will be something that we have never done it, but something that we have to definitely look out for. The second thing is that while it sounds easy, but we also have to ask ourselves whether each of the country has the so-called excess capacity to transmit, because most of the country would have planned for your grid infrastructure, right? For your own internal use. There's also another area that people have to actually iron it out to know that whether there is indeed a spare capacity, I call it, for this electron to be actually transmitted. So I think that's why Singapore has decided to start in a very modest manner by just trying out 100 megawatts. Mainly to iron out the operational coordination required to bring power from Laos to Singapore first, before we see whether there is a possibility to do it in a bigger way.
I'm going to pivot a little bit to talk a bit more about you guys now, YTL Seraya. You introduced me to an interesting term, gentailer, right? Obviously, you're a generator as well. As we talk about what Singapore is doing nationally, talk about as well what local power suppliers such as yourself have done and must do more to minimize your own carbon footprint. Explain, for example, your power plants. How much more can be gained in terms of efficiency that you think is still out there to be gained?
YTL Power Seraya actually has about 1,500 megawatt gas-fired plant. So I think when the plants are designed, they're already operating at optimal efficiency. So if you ask me, is there more so-called efficiency that can be squeezed out of it? I would say yes, but it won't be actually significant. what is important for us is that we see that there's a need to actually work on changing our portfolio mix to be 100% gas-fired, to include some import of power. With our parentage, with YTL Group in Malaysia, right? The YTL Group itself is exploring whether they could develop large-scale solar installation in Malaysia. We will build the transmission grid and actually sell this green power into Singapore. And of course, when the power is being injected into the Singapore grid, right, that's where the retailer like myself, Genico, will take over to actually start to sell the electricity and to actually bid the electricity into the wholesale. So I think that is how we see ourselves being able to transform, to actually embrace more green into our portfolio.
Talk about the national effort though. Let me get your take. I'm sure you guys had significant conversations with the government when they were formulating policies around the carbon tax. In discussions going forward now, they've talked about raising that. What's your perspective on that in your conversations with the government as it explores raising that tax a little bit more?
If you ask any company, of course, we will not welcome a higher tax. But we understand through the conversation, we understand that in order to encourage and to achieve our sustainability target, I think the carbon tax is something that we definitely cannot avoid. So we are working quite hand in hand with the government to actually see how we can actually moderate the increase in carbon tax. Hopefully, it will come in a way that is something that we can still pay for it.
The interesting thing is this. I would imagine that the carbon tax now is at a low enough level that generators and suppliers such as yourself can in a way absorb it. Do you think as it gets higher, therefore, it will at some point get passed down to the consumer, which probably is meant to be, right? So that they can manage their own electricity usage as well, knowing that the carbon tax has been factored into the price. Do you think that it will get to a point where consumers become more aware that as it gets higher, it will get passed down to them?
That will be the case. It is impossible for the generators to actually absorb any of this carbon tax. Maybe I see that as an opportunity that it may actually make maybe greener power that is actually not subject to carbon tax actually more affordable. It's very important for us to continue to change our portfolio mix such that we have a mixture of gas-fired as well as renewable energy. Natural gas-fired plant is quite clean technology, but we can't just overnight displace them because they are still very important to ensure the reliability of the system. So I think we generally need to live with the fact that we will need to have a mixture of natural gas, which is subject to the carbon tax, and cleaner energy without carbon tax. That is the cost that the consumer would have to pay as part of puzzle of us moving towards a greener environment.
Maybe a last question now then, and try to get back into a little bit bigger picture too. In Singapore's overall efforts at going green, other initiatives are moving too. Electric cars, electric buses. You see things, even data centers are becoming a big part of it. All these are big electricity users, right, obviously. So on the one hand, we see that demand is obviously going to rise going forward for electricity. But on the other hand, we have to wait for technology. We're going to wait for infrastructural changes to happen. When you see all these things happening, what does YTL Power Suraya think in keeping up with such increasing demand, but also making sure that increases are manageable at the same time and also green at the same time? Isn't it a bit of juggling three or four balls at the same time?
Because the system demand will be increasing with all this increasing need for electricity from data center or electric vehicle, right? That also further reinforced that there's a need for all the natural gas combined cycle to continue to operate in the market to actually provide the base load. Where I think I see is that the increase in demand, right, we definitely need to bring in more power import will be the most obvious way to bring in additional power into the system, and that are green, so that actually we can meet the system demand while actually being green. Slowly, greening fire, I call it, the power industry. Thirdly, right, other than just looking at physical injection into the grid, right, we can also try to embrace more of this carbon offsetting by the purchase of carbon credit or even renewable energy certs to help to offset the overall carbon emission in Singapore.
Well, Lim Han Kwang, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jamie.
And thanks for listening to The Climate Conversations. Stay up to date on CNA's coverage of climate change on CNA.asia. You can also find this and other CNA podcasts on our website and on iTunes and Spotify. The team behind this podcast are Crispina Robert, Lin Su Ling, and Aaron Low. I'm Jamie Ho. Till next week.